I know that in our community, not having facial hair is seen as a sign of either untrustworthiness or you're a sellout. You know, you look at all these Republican cats, right? All these brothers who claim to be Republicans. Not
Damn.
nan one of them got facial hair.
I didn't think
Nan
about that.
one of
That's true.
look at your man Tim Scott. Not your man, but Tim Scott, a
That's
sellout motherfucker in Kentucky.
Wow.
The dude in South Carolina,
Yep.
the senator, the black dude,
Yeah,
Herschel
yeah.
Walker, all these cats, none
Wow.
of these dudes got facial hair. So, you know, in the community, you got to have facial hair, because if you don't, people gonna look at you sideways.
I didn't even think about that. How you feel about the face tattoos?
I mean, anybody who's got a face tattoo, I don't care what color you are. Hey, I'm staying the hell away from you.
That's kind of my feeling. I feel like if you have a face tattoo, you are either independently wealthy or you're gonna rob me. One or the
Yeah. Or
other.
you have serious mental problems.
Yeah, because
I mean,
you.
listen, any tats above the collarbone, you are dealing with an individual that is special.
Yeah, that person don't give a
What color
fuck.
you is or ain't.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's how that works. I think we've started the podcast already. So with that, I'll say welcome to another edition of your favorite podcast. Indeed, it is Quality Hang. I am Rod Brooks, and as always, I am joined on this podcasting adventure by my homie, my partner in crime, the King of New Orleans, Louisiana, Marcus Osborne. What's up, man? How you doing?
What's good, man? It's a good week. We got a
Yeah,
good week of
man.
stuff happening. Jesus.
Yeah, good week of stuff. Well, I mean, I think we are of the same mind that this is a good week because the 2022 national midterm elections are finally over.
Yeah.
And as expected, the Republicans gained a very small measure of control
Yeah.
in the House of Representatives. They are the
Yeah.
majority, not by a lot.
Not by a
Also,
lot.
as expected, the Democratic Party has won control of the Senate,
Yeah.
and that happened thanks to.
Full legitimate control. Like we had, they have a
Yes,
majority, a real majority now.
a real majority. Joe Manchin, that clown in West Virginia, and that female clown in
Christian Sinema.
Arizona, they now do not hold the Democratic Party hostage with their shenanigans. Vice President Kamala Harris, now her tie-breaking vote is no longer necessary because the state of Georgia in a runoff election by a narrow margin, surprisingly to me anyway, reelected Senator Reverend Raphael Warnock to the United States Senate, beating mush brain clown Herschel Walker. So the Senate is in the control of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
That's good for marriage equality. That is good for getting in judges on a federal level who are not world-class assholes. So yeah, it is a good day. And a couple of things, you know, I always felt that the Democrats were going to have a fairly representative showing in this election. And not to pat myself on the back, but I will. I was right. I am surprised. The one thing I was wrong about, I thought Herschel Walker was going to get worked, and he was going to get worked badly in the first election, not the runoff. It went to a runoff because basically it was 50-50, and even the
Yeah.
runoff a few days ago eventually ended up being very close. But I never saw Herschel Walker being taken seriously enough by enough people to where he would be a sitting United States senator. And you know, in an extended way, because the Republican Party is so gross and so disgusting and so repugnant, and all of their ideas are retrograde at best, I never really bought into the idea that this country was plunging headfirst into ridiculous authoritarian Republican dictator rule. All of the stuff that they are all of the things that they represent are just so god awful that I just did not think that there would be enough people in this country to go, that's what I want to do. I didn't think that there would be enough people who were still sucking at the teat of the former president, whose name I will not mention, where their ideology would become the rule. And again, not to pat myself on the back, but I will pat myself on the back. I was 100% right. Check out these numbers here. Donald Trump endorsed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people in various gubernatorial races around the country. He endorsed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people in Senate races across the country, including Herschel Walker. And the former president endorsed 4 people who were running for various secretaries of state offices in this country. Guess how many people, of all the people that the former president endorsed, guess how many of them won their respective races? Just take a guess.
Oh, I don't think any of them won, right?
2.
Which 2?
Lombardo. I don't know what gubernatorial race he was involved. Lombardo is the only guy who won a gubernatorial race. Ron Johnson in Wisconsin, barely.
He was going to win anyway.
But he barely beat Mandela Barnes, his brother.
Yeah.
Barely won that, reelected to that civic seat, and every single Secretary of State,
those are the guys who control all the voting issues and the voting processes in those states.
Trump endorsed candidates. There were 4 of them. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them lost. Every single one. That, to me, right there, is a world-class ass-kicking. The Republicans did not win a single Democratic-held seat this midterm election. Not one. Not one. Yeah. I could never be scared of the former president, his ideology, he tried to say, and the zealots who follow him, the stupid idiots who follow them. I could never be afraid of them, Marcus, because they only have the power that we give them. I know that there is some danger involved with these people. I understand that this ideology, if it's truly not stopped in its tracks, it's insidious. It can continue to be a problem for this country. But the idea that these people were somehow smart enough and cunning enough and numerous enough to take control of this country, that all of a sudden our democracy was going to end the day after Election Day in November, and that we were going to become some dystopian authoritarian, he tried to say, cult. I never bought it. I never bought it. Because there are not enough people to get on board with the bullshit that the former president and his lackeys were selling. And this midterm election just proved it.
I definitely agree with you that the majority of people are probably somewhere in the middle. And many of them are probably left-leaning. You know, many of the primary social issues, that's the case. The problem is that I think what the Republicans had was a candidate problem and not a message problem. And that's their own fault, because I'm fairly certain that had that been another Republican and not Herschel Walker, we don't have Mr. Warnock in there.
No, you're 100% right. But here's the thing. If you have a candidate problem, then you also have a message problem, because the candidate is the one who relays the message. And what we saw in the gubernatorial races, the majority of the Senate races, and all of the Secretary of State races is that they gonna keep putting these repugnant people out there to put forth the repugnant message, because the only people who really believe in the repugnant message of the current Republican Party, led by the former president, are the people who are willing to sacrifice themselves at the altar of the former president. They're the ones who get the repugnant message out, because they're the only ones who, for whatever reason, whether they believe it or whether it is financially beneficial for them to believe it, they're the only ones who'll get out there and say this dumb shit.
Well, they fucked up. I say they fucked up just because I don't think, how do I put this? I think Ronald Reagan literally was saying all the same things that current day Republicans are saying. Mm-hmm. He supported all those things. And Ronald Reagan was president for 8 years, and he was and is still one of the most popular presidents in the history of this country.
Yes.
If you look at Ronald Reagan and all the things that he stood for, literally, and this not even no real no differences at all in the policies of Ronald Reagan and the policies of Donald Trump. And that's the scary part is you have what you had in Ronald Reagan was a smooth Donald Trump. And that person, and let's face it, let's be honest, the Republican in this country is always going to have a built-in advantage when it comes to voting. Why? Because the great majority of white people in this country, the majority of white people in this country vote Republican. But that's not debatable, that's fact. The majority of white people in this country, this is why I always say that most white people might not be racist, but most white people are okay with some racism. And so you have a country that is already leaning right in terms of its political parties. All you got to do is get somebody in there smooth enough to package that thing and make it sound good and make it.
Sure.
Look at what they've done to Ohio. Like, we have not paid attention to how much Ohio and Pennsylvania have changed. The demographics of those states haven't changed, but the ability of the right to make their message palatable to those working class, rural Democrats, blue collar folks, that is what they've done, and that's what they did well with Ronald Reagan. And if we are in a position where we're walking around thinking, well, you know, we don't have to worry about this. This message, as long as this nobody's going to buy into this message. I'm like, nah, that's not the way it's going to work.
Well, I think we're talking about two different things here in terms of how we, the two of us, are looking at today's Republican Party. Everything you just said is 100% true. But what I'm talking about is the extremism part of the Republican Party. Because you're always going to have these people who call themselves fiscal conservatives, and they are all about you know, cutting government spending, you know, all that buzzword bullshit that we all know is basically, I don't want to give my money to poor people. And I find that to be 100% awful and repugnant. But we're always going to have those people. What I'm talking about in today's Republican Party, where I understand that people are fearful of what they are doing right now. But my thing is, I could never really be scared to think that that's going to be the way of our current society here in this country, because I don't feel that that message is really going to resonate with enough people to where I have to go, oh my God, the extremists have taken over and we are plunging headlong into an authoritarian era in this country. I'm simply talking about all of the secretaries of state.
Yes,
that were endorsed by the former president, the gubernatorial candidates and the senators, most if not all of them were on that extremist bullshit.
Yep.
That is being pushed in the Republican Party. That's what I'm talking about, and that's the part where I was just like, yeah, it's scary, but again, they are only as powerful as we make them out to be. I never saw these people as individually and as a collective, you know, these feared boogeymen, because I'm like, it ain't enough people gonna buy that shit. Now, maybe one person or two people or 10 people is too many, but I'm talking about big, big numbers of people who are like, yes, I 100% am down with the extremist views of the current state of the Republican Party. And the Republican Party is an extremist party right now. Yeah. Why? Because they have sold themselves to the devil, that is the former president, whose name I will continue not to mention on this show.
Yeah, I certainly hope that people stay woke, because it's pretty frightening to me how close these races have been. Mm-hmm. Like, so in the extremism part, I'm not as worried about, but if you get the right candidates who can hide the extremism,
And then
get elected and insert that extremism into policy the way Ronald Reagan did.
Yeah.
You've got big problems. And listen, well, the other
so
part
you know
of
who
that
dude is though, right? Ron DeSantis in Florida. Yeah. That's the guy.
I'm less worried about him because he's not like the smooth character that a guy like Ronald Reagan
was. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, so, Reagan, as awful as he is, I mean, if we're just looking at it from a pure political theater point of view, I mean, the dude was the master. He was, as awful as he was, that dude played the game absolutely correctly.
And Ronald Reagan, people think he was like this. Ronald Reagan was the smooth talking, nicest dude. He never made people. He was never a guy like Trump or a guy like DeSantis who was bombastic. He always tried to make things positive. Mm-hmm. He always tried to put give a positive spin to people, and he made folks feel so good.
It's morning in America.
Yeah, he made people feel great. Now, I don't know if DeSantis has that ability. But my concern is the guys who are able to hide that. Listen, the fact of the matter is, for the first time in almost a century, the Supreme Court is decidedly conservative.
Julia.
And I, like, there's two cases coming up. This one where they're talking about the designer who doesn't want to serve gay customers. Mm-hmm. And this one, which is kind of scary, the election bill that they're also going to decide on. Both those cases.
The Carolina redistricting bill.
Those are very, very scary.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Yeah. The Supreme Court is a whole different animal, though. And the fear was that if the Democrats did not get control of the Senate, that the right-leaning Supreme Court and continuing to put in right-leaning federal judges, that was really going to lead us down the road of Republican, right-wing, authoritarian-type government. So, yeah, we're not out of the woods. I mean, it's you know, you do a quick victory lap.
Yeah,
because of the results of the 22 midterm election. But yeah, you still got to stay vigilant, and the fight's not done. What I am going to sit back and enjoy, because I do enjoy watching terrible people have terrible things done to themselves, watching the Republican Civil War going on, because the former president is being rebuked by powerful Republicans. And he is going to burn that party down, and he gonna take some people with him, because he's
been a long
going
time
down.
Coming.
And I can't wait to watch it, because it's long gonna time be coming. Good.
it can't happen soon enough. I can't wait to see this dude in jail. I can't wait to see him in jail.
I can't wait for him to just start flaming DeSantis.
Oh,
and just
my God.
Flaming Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham. He didn't already. You know, just poor Mitch. I just can't believe I just said poor Mitch McConnell. Fuck Mitch McConnell. But he'd been giving that dude the blues for the past few weeks. So, yeah.
Ooh, man, boy.
This thing is, it is going to be fun. What you got for us, man, in the world of lifestyle?
Dude, so this whole Facebook thing, Meta. So apparently, basically what's going on is all these news groups are trying to charge Facebook for their content. And Facebook is like, oh, I'm cool. If you want to do that, we just take all your stuff off of our shit.
These old media companies, these newspapers who are just right now on life support because nobody buys newspapers anymore, they really think they was going to walk up to Mark Zuckerberg, who is a robot. He has no feelings. They thought they was going to walk up to him and be like, you got to pay for the news that you're taking from us. Like, word, really? You think I'm going to do that? All y'all can die right now, and it's not going to make a damn bit of difference to us here at Facebook/Meta or whatever the hell they're calling themselves. Nice, real nice gambit there, newspapers. How'd that work out for you?
It's so funny that I actually am sympathetic to their general philosophy here. It's you're taking
too.
Our content and you're basically making money off of people sharing our content. But let's face it. You need Facebook more than Facebook needs you.
Right. You ain't going to bully Facebook into giving you money. What are you talking about?
And here's the funny thing, Rod. Because I thought about this. Here's a funny thing. If this actually does happen, and these guys actually try to go this route, and Facebook calls their bluffs and just yanks all that shit off, it's good for everybody. Because then the power of the social media groups and all the social media messaging from these weirdo conspiracy theorists, right wing, nut job media outlets, they don't have this stuff. This is what's amplified their shit over the past 10 years. Mm-hmm. You suddenly remove them from Facebook and Twitter and all these other social media outlets, and that power is stripped. Like, they got to work a lot. Remember when it was just you get a chain email from somebody? Barack Obama is the devil. It's a chain email. And your crazy uncle like, what are you doing, man? What are you doing sending me this? And now, but now people have this stuff on Facebook. They share these weird-ass news stories. If you take that away, you're going to cripple a lot of those folks. So I wouldn't necessarily be completely hurt by it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I don't think the newspapers, they don't have a leg to stand on.
None.
Because Facebook and Twitter are the only things that are keeping them relevant.
Yep.
So, you know, they can walk up there, you know, with their chest all out, faking and perpetrating to Facebook. Like, you give us what you pay us what we demand for our content. Or it's like,
I dare you to go ahead and ask me for money. I dare you.
It would kill.
Oh yeah.
It would kill the newspapers off dead. It'd be like spraying Raid on roaches. It's a wrap. It's over. Nobody's coming back from that. So these newspapers, these media outlets are going to walk this back with their tail between their legs because Facebook and social media, and I'm not saying it's right, it's just the way it is, but
they're the only
thing that is keeping them relevant. So you need to take what you're getting right now and you need to find another way, because trying to bully Mark Zuckerberg, that ain't the lick, baby. It's not gonna work for you.
I remember doing a morning show. I was doing a morning show in 2007. And I don't know why, but I remember this specific news story that people were, this was the first time people got their news from more from the internet than from newspapers. Mm-hmm. And that was, at the time, that was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And it was particular to a specific age group at the time, an age group that was at that time in their 20s. That group is now in their 30s. Mm-hmm. And I find myself not reading newspapers at all unless I'm online. And if they try to charge me online, if they say, you know, you can't read this article unless you pay for a subscription, I'm like, oh, okay. I just go find it somewhere else.
Yeah, I just won't read it. Right.
I just find it somewhere else. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it's like what happened to music at the turn of the century when we realized that we could get music for free, and then the record company was like, well, you're stealing. We're like, well, yes, we know that. Well, you should pay for it. Why will we pay for it when we could get it for free?
Yeah.
And then when they realized that they really couldn't fight that battle, what did they do? They came off that thing.
Yep.
And they went through Apple, and we then were able to buy music.
Yep.
For 99 cents.
Yes,
we were able to buy albums. We were able to buy songs a la carte. If we wanted to buy the entire album, we could do that. If we wanted to buy single songs from an album, we could do that. But instead of charging us $18.99 for a goddamn CD like they used to do before Kazaa and LimeWire, now they started paying us, they started charging us really a fee that made a lot more sense. It hurt the artists. It hurt the industry. And the artist is still trying to recover. The music industry has changed completely. But remember how the labels and the music industry at large were saying, oh, my God, how are we going to survive this? They survived. They're still making money.
Yeah.
But you know what? Adapt or die.
That's right.
And the media, specifically the print media, newspaper, adapt or die. That's just the way it is. And you might not be right. You might not like it. But that's how it is.
Adapt it. Just understand that once the technology is here and once people experience the technology, you can forget it. You may as well start thinking ahead because this is where it's going.
You are not going to put that toothpaste back in the tube.
Nope. And it's interesting you bring up the music industry, because this has also been one of the things I've been fascinated with, is the way the music industry has turned. Once upon a time, albums were important.
Right.
They're not nearly as important now as they used to be. Because I can't tell you, and I actually have to make it a point to listen to a full album now. Otherwise, I'm going to my playlist and I'm just playing a handful of songs that I really like.
Yeah.
And that's what 99% of people do these days.
Yeah.
So you get that, the album used to be its own form of art.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when that album comes out, that album better be just a bunch of hits.
Yep.
It better be a bunch of hits and you done.
Yep. You ain't got time for filler.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Filler is dead.
Exactly. And you and I come from an era where we would get that album and then we can open up and we can read the liner notes and the credits and all that. I missed that. Even with CDs, I love doing that.
It was an experience. Yeah, it was. It wasn't just an auditory experience. It was just a full sensory experience. You know, you got some artwork, you know, as far as the cover art, maybe something in the middle. If the artist felt like they should put their lyrics in there, you got to read the lyrics, maybe get more of an understanding of the song or songs you were listening to. You got to see pictures of the artist or the band. So you got all of that. I mean, it was a true, you know, it was a tactile experience. You could feel it, you could see it, you could hear it, you could do everything but taste it. Now, music is 100% just simply an auditory experience.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, just the way it is.
I got to jump into this pop culture take. Because this is big breaking news. I'm sure you've seen it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Brittany Griner has been released, buddy.
Saw that, yeah.
She is released. WNBA star Brittany Griner has been in jail for, God, how long has it been, Rod? Almost a year?
I believe it's been 10 months.
Yeah, so it's been almost a year. They snagged her up in that Russian airport. And just kind of reading the background story on it, these Russians, dude, these cats, I mean, you can call them a lot of things, but they know how to play certain games. Oh. And this whole espionage thing, they are good at it. So apparently, just reading a couple of articles here, they had targeted Brittany Griner. They targeted her as a person because this guy who they got out of jail, what did they call him? The Merchant of Death?
Hey, he was some arms dealer, big arms dealer.
So this is their game. Oh, you got one of ours? We'll get one of yours. They had targeted Brittany Griner. They looked, they profiled her, essentially. They watched her for a while. They saw that she was in the country. They said they knew before she got to the airport that she might have some weed with her. And they said, no, we're going to let her go through. And then when she gets in there, that's when we're going to get her. Make it a big, high-profile thing. Snatched her up. We're going to get our man out of jail. Like, these dudes know how to play this espionage game so well. I am glad that she is out. But there are a bunch of people who aren't happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, well, those people are, what's the word we're looking for? Those people are assholes. Are you not going to be happy that an American who was in a Russian prison, which you don't have to go to Russia or have gone to a Russian prison to know that the words Russian and prison, yo, man, that's not a good situation. How could you not be happy as an American? How could not be happy as a human being that someone who was in prison for having a vape pen, for having weed in a vape pen, can you not be happy that they're out? I wouldn't care if Brittany Griner was a white Christian evangelical preacher.
Yeah.
Hey, man, you got out of a Russian prison thanks to the hard work of the United States government. I'm going to be happy for you. For you not to be happy that she has been freed thanks to the United States government in a prisoner exchange, for you not to be happy, that shows your true colors.
And the interesting thing is that, you know, one of the reasons that people are pissed off about it is this is just a WNBA star. What about the other political prisoners that are being held in Russia? There's another guy, Paul Whelan, who's been in there since 2018. Mm-hmm. He's been the other sort of high-profile political prisoner. Though there are a lot of people going, well, why weren't they able to get him out? Why'd they work so hard to get this, you know, basketball player out and not this guy who's a real American hero, et cetera, et cetera? Well, you know, the Russians are playing hardball.
But let me ask you this, though. You said, old boy Whelan. Mm-hmm. I know the answer to this question. I'm pretending like I don't. But you said the old boy Whelan had been in the Russian justice since 2018, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who was the president from 2018 to 2020?
I mean, you know, that's right.
Who was the president?
That's right.
Was it Barack Obama? No. Was it Joe Biden? No. Joe Biden didn't become president until 2020. Yeah. So you say, oh boy, was in the Russian system since 2018. Who was the president in 2018? Oh, that's right. That asshole that combs his hair over every morning and puts on orange makeup. That guy. So you mad that Brittany Griner got out thanks to the help of the United States government, which has Joe Biden in its executive office.
Yes.
You mad that she got out because, oh boy, Whelan, who's been in there since 2018, he didn't get out.
Yes.
So how you aren't you mad at the wrong people, or shouldn't you be mad at somebody else and not Brittany Griner? If you want to be mad that the Biden administration didn't free Whelan, and I think your point is right with Marcus, like, no, the Russians are playing this game that they seem to be uniquely qualified to play.
Yeah.
But if you're mad that Joe Biden didn't get Whelan out, okay, I can get that. But why are you mad at Brittany Griner and you're not mad at the guy who was president for 2 years of Whelan being incarcerated in Russia, the first 2 years?
And by the way, let's not forget, that dude managed to get some other basketball players off on some theft, didn't he? Didn't he get the Ball brother out of prison?
Did he, when that idiot went over to China to steal his sunglasses?
Yes,
the one Ball brother that can't actually play ball?
Yes. He got him out.
Was that the former president's doing, or was that China to be like, man, y'all could take this idiot back?
No, he specifically intervened to make that happen. And nobody was mad about it then.
Well, you know, as far as this Brittany Griner, of course nobody was mad about it. As far as this Brittany Griner situation is concerned, I will choose to believe that one person only was responsible, singularly responsible for getting free in Brittany Griner.
Yep.
And that person, of course, was Dennis Rodman. Remember when Dennis Rodman
he hooked it up.
Remember when Dennis Rodman said, me and Putin,
we tight,
we go back like spinal cords and car seats. I'm going to go free Brittany Griner. Next thing you know, 3 months later, Brittany Griner is out. Dennis Rodman, like, baby, ace diplomat.
I got you. Listen, don't worry about you. I got you. That's my boy. He'll do some shit for me. It's all good. Let me go talk to him real quick. We'll get your girl out. And I have to say this. The family of Paul Whelan, they released a statement themselves.
I saw this, yeah.
Supporting this action by the United States. So if they're cool with it, why would we be bitching?
Because their statement, I don't have it up in front of me. I'm going to paraphrase here. I probably shouldn't do it, but I'm going to do it anyway. Their statement was basically what I just said a second ago.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be happy that an American is out of a Russian prison.
Yes.
Even if it's not the American you wanted out of the Russian prison.
Yeah.
Like, don't show your awfulness. Don't show your racism. Don't show your homophobia. Don't be so obvious by saying it ain't the right American that was freed out of the Russian prison. You dig what I'm saying?
Yeah, man.
Because you're telling on yourself. You're 100% telling on yourself. What you're saying is, she should still be in prison, or it should be Whelan. What you're saying is, I don't like black people, and I don't like gay people.
Yep.
That's what you're saying.
And I don't like tall people.
Mad about what
people.
I just said. Oh, you? Yeah, right. I don't like tall people, especially. That's why I'm so worked up about this. Like, you can get mad at what I'm saying, but you know I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
You know I'm right.
These are facts. These are absolute facts. I'm glad she's out. I'm glad she's. I think is she on her way home? I
gotta love. Yeah.
She's on her way home, so she hasn't touched ground yet. So that'll be a great moment. I can't wait to see that happen. I'm sure they'll have it on live TV somewhere, but that'll be very, very cool.
All right, let's move on to the comical world of sports.
Oh, boy.
What you got?
So there's a couple of big sports stories this week. One has a more local feel, but it has national repercussions. Aaron Judge has re-signed with the New York Yankees.
Yes, he did. And Giants fans here in the Bay Area, boy, they are so many words right now. They are, they are angry. They are bitter. They are crestfallen. Some of them are pragmatic about it. And the pragmatism comes from this. When is the last time the New York Yankees have allowed one of their key free agents to just go somewhere?
Man.
Never.
So glad you're saying that.
Never.
Because I have heard, I've actually been kind of annoyed with some of these perspectives. They didn't do enough. They should never have let him leave the city. They, Farhan and everyone should be fired, etc. Like, what are you talking about? Like, these are the Yankees. And the fact that he listen, you got played. Just accept it. This right. is the way the negotiation game right. goes. Like, it's fine. Well, Farhan should have known. Why should he have known? He did everything he said he would do. He made the big – he threw a shitload of money at Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge was never coming back here.
Right, right, right. And the Yankees knew that, which is why the Yankees offered him, what was it, $215 million yeah. over however many years before the 2022 season started, because they knew we'll eventually pay him what he's worth anyway. Yep. And yep. Aaron Judge knew – they're going to eventually pay me what I believe I'm worth anyway. And then all of a sudden he has a year where he breaks a hallowed record, the American League home run record. Yeah. And the Yankees get back to the playoffs to once again be bounced out by the world champion Houston Astros. But the Yankees make it to the playoffs. And all of a sudden Aaron Judge's value, which is already pretty damn ridiculously high, goes yeah. up even more. Aaron Judge knew he was going to be a Yankee for the rest of his career. And the Yankees knew that Aaron Judge was going to be a Yankee for the rest of his career. You know who else knew that Aaron Judge was going to be a Yankee for the rest of his career? The San Francisco Giants. But they did what they had to do. They yep. were a part of the theatrical production of Aaron Judge talking to them and them making an offer.
He's at Warriors games. He's at 49er games. He's a yeah. local guy. Like, no, he's not a local guy.
He's a Stop Yankee saying that. Is yeah. what he is.
Stop saying that. Stop
when,
it.
When you're a Yankee of that type of stature, and you know the stature I'm talking about, when you are a legend, and that yep. dude is already a legend, and he's on his way to being even more legendary, Aaron Judge is, the Yankees do not just let you go. The Giants were used as a stalking horse. So yep. if the Giants offered him, what was it, 8 years, $300 million? Yeah. The Yankees came with 9 for $360 million. If the Giants would have offered 9 for $360 million, the Yankees would have came with 10 for $400 million. Exactly. They would have kept going up 1 year and 40, 50, 60, however many million dollars they felt it needed to happen.
You're not outbidding the Yankees for a player they want. Like, just stop it.
For Aaron Judge? Come Stop on, it. Man.
Stop it.
Come on. And Giants fans here, and I understand it because the Giants are a storied franchise. The Giants have had some recent World Series success. This is a baseball area. The ballpark is awesome. That uniform is awesome. Everything about the Giants is great. However, when it's baseball hierarchy, and Giants fans don't like to hear this, but it's the truth.
Yes.
You're slotted third. You're behind the Yankees, and you're behind the Dodgers.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's it. That's it.
I would say in terms of, like, baseball lore, there's still a team like the Cardinals and the Cubs, the Red Sox, who would come before the Giants. I think that folks in the Bay Area are very delusional about their teams and about the importance of their teams on a national scale. The 49ers are the most important team in the Bay Area on a national scale. And, and even they don't measure up to the Cowboys or the Yankees or any of the – I mean, it's just like we delude ourselves into thinking that we're the Giants. Why can't we? Because you're not the Yankees or the Dodgers. Like, that's why. Like, let's be real about this shit, dude. You're not. And there's no way you're going to outbid the Yankees. Don't delude yourself.
And a team like the Padres, they have to overspend, as yes. they have been doing over yes. the past 3 or 4 years.
Yes.
With Machado. And then they gave Tatis that money. And then he ended up being a steroid cheat. They just gave Xander Bogaerts, former Red Sox shortstop, now he's with the Padres. They just gave him a multi-year, hundreds of millions of dollar deal. Giants fans, and I get it because we're all delusional about our favorite teams. But Giants fans look and go, well, why not us?
Yep.
Well, we just told you why. Yep. Because you're not the Yankees. Because you're not the Dodgers. And yes. okay, fine. The Giants won 3 World Series in 5 years. And they've yeah. won a World Series more recently than the Yankees.
Yep.
The Dodger World Series. That's a Mickey Mouse World Series. And not counting that 2020 pandemic World Series, the Dodgers' last World Series came in 88. Ronald Reagan was still alive, and he was president the last time the Dodgers won a legitimate World Series. But that don't matter because you're not the Dodgers, because you're not the Yankees. I will give them a little bit more grace than you, and I'll put them ahead of the Cardinals. And fine, me living here in the Bay Area, I do have some Giants. I have an affinity for them. I do have some Giants bias. But I think your point is right, that the Giants, once you get past the Yankees and the Dodgers, the Giants fit in there with the Cardinals, the Red Sox, and to a lesser extent, the Cubs. Mm-hmm. And Giants fans don't really like to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, I applaud the Giants for doing what they said they were going to do. But the fact of the matter is, Aaron Judge clearly wanted to be a Yankee, and you can shit on the Giants organization all you want, but what were they supposed to do?
Right. And more importantly, the Yankees wanted Aaron Judge to be a Yankee.
Let's be honest, Rod. Even if the contracts are even, they're not really even.
Right.
There's a certain prestige that comes with being a Yankee. You're in a number one media market. And by the way, don't even give me this bullshit about the Bay Area being a major media market. I know that it is, but again, it ain't New York.
It's not New York.
Like, let's be real. It's not New York. Like, we got to be honest with ourselves, y'all. Like, you lost out on this. It's fine. You did it what you – and so, and this is the other part that really bugged me, because a lot of people go, well, they're acting like the Oakland A's. No, they are not.
Stop it.
The A's – here's the difference between the A's and the Giants. The A's would never have even come close to offering any kind of contract to a player like Aaron Judge. Anything. They don't even try. The Giants were at least in the game. They gave it a shot, and they didn't lose. They just didn't get chosen.
But here is where Giants fans, their bitterness, I do understand it. It's the totality of the situation. It's another big-name free agent that they lost out on for you know, different reasons.
Sure.
Okay, so you don't get Judge. Damn. You also didn't get Bryce Harper. Damn. You also didn't get Shohei Ohtani. And
there's reasons behind those things, right? There's legitimate reasons.
No. I'm saying that the reasons are different.
Yeah.
But just kind of putting it all in the same bowl here to mix it up, that it's just another big name free agent that Giants fans felt like they should have had because they believed the Giants to be a big name club.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things that players making all this money has done, it's kind of made the location not as big a deal anymore.
Yes.
Like, because Bryce Harper, he's going to get his money no matter where he goes. So wait a minute. Now I'm going to make this money no matter where I go, and I don't have to. I like the East Coast. Why do I want to go to the West Coast? I don't like it there. I'm going to get this money here.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm going to just stick it out here. Like, it's just becoming less and less relevant what city you're in.
Yeah.
Because the money is so stupid. You don't have to worry about all the ancillary things that come with a certain market unless you have in your mind, I want to be a big global superstar. You want to go to the Yankees or the Dodgers. But other than that, there's no reason to be worried about what city you're in.
You can be adjacent to New York City and not have to deal with New York City.
Yep.
You could go to Philadelphia.
Yep.
You can be adjacent to L.A. and not actually have to be in L.A. You can be in Orange County or in San Diego. So I think your point is 100% on point.
Yeah. Folks can choose the lifestyle that they want at this point because they're getting so much money. In the days where you had to think about, okay, I'm going to get this $5 million. Remember when Ricky Henderson Ricky Henderson got $3 million and everybody lost their fucking mind.
I remember when Nolan Ryan got, he was the first contract where he made $1 million.
$1 million, yeah.
I remember that. People are like, what the fuck?
and now you're like, oh, that motherfucker's a pauper.
What am I supposed to do with $1 million a year? I can't gas up my Gulfstream jet with $1 million a year. What y'all trying to do to me?
And I think that's a really underappreciated aspect of these big contracts. Oh, I'm getting $3 million, but now it's $3 million in California or it's $3 million in Arlington, Texas. And if I go to California, I might not get, I can have these ancillary things happen, especially if I'm in LA. I can get these movie deals, these commercials and stuff like that. If I'm in a small market, I can't get those things. Well, now it doesn't matter at all.
Let me ask you this question, staying in sports, but going to a different topic. Sure. Putting aside his football abilities, just put that aside, because his football abilities, the person I'm going to ask you about here, his talent was undeniable.
Yeah.
But as a person, just as a person, and I know I'm asking you to make a value judgment on someone that I will assume you never met. I've never met him, but that won't stop me and doesn't stop anybody from making value judgments on people. What do you think about Deion Sanders?
Oh boy.
The person person in the image that he has projected now for what are we talking about? 30 years.
Yeah, good 30, 35 years. I think Deion Sanders is a guy who managed to he figured out how to play the game at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
He figured it out, and I think that he's probably a decent dude. I think that he's probably a sincere guy in his faith, et cetera. But I also think he's got a little bit of P.T. Barnum in him,
mm-hmm.
and he just knows how to work this game. I think mm-hmm. we're kind of getting into his leaving Jackson State.
Yeah,
I will say I'm not as angry about him leaving Jackson State as some other people are. It just doesn't bother me. I'm not bothered by it at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I'm not angry about it, but I think Deion Sanders is he's a huckster. He is a guy who knows how to play the game.
Yes,
I think he's a world class phony. I really do. and here's where I go with this.
Mm-hmm.
He has always struck me as someone who. What I don't like about him is how he uses God and religion.
Yeah, yeah.
To bend a situation his way, and how he will use God and religion to sort of absolve him of mm-hmm. any criticism of how he goes about doing things.
Yeah.
This is and where I knew. I felt I was right on, and because there's always been something about him that I found to be phony. And this is going back to when he was coming out of Florida State.
Yeah.
It was just even as a youngster, I was just like, it's just something. And here's where I knew I was right. He ran a charter school in Dallas.
Yeah.
10, 15 years ago when charter schools were all the rage. And if you know charter schools, you know that's
a hot button subject too.
It's awful, and it is a place for grifters and people who don't give a shit about kids, mainly poor kids of color, and their education. Charter schools are a cesspool. Deion Sanders ran a sham charter school.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who does that, what it tells me is you're a horrible person. You're out for yourself, and you don't give a damn about poor black people. You say you do. You say you do, but you don't. You don't.
I haven't heard the story about the school, so you'll have to fill me in on that. But
I mean, he was suing people. The school was suing him. It was awful. And like I said, when you're the type of person that does that, I got no use for you. And I think what he's done in this Jackson State situation, hey, listen, man, I understand how the game is played. I understand how the college football game is played. I got no problem with him leaving. The problem I had with Deion Sanders and what he did is that he used that God bullshit to get him into Jackson State so he could get what he wanted out of Jackson State, which was a high-paying job at a Power 5 school. I don't have a problem with him going to Jackson State using that situation to his eventual advantage of going to Colorado and getting the job that he wanted for the amount of money that he wants. The problem I have is that for him to be like, God called me to Jackson State. So God called you to Jackson State for you to stay there for 2.5 years and then for you to bounce to the first power job that came along that gave you the money and the prestige and the power that you wanted. I got a problem with that. If you go back and you look at Deion Sanders' history, he's always using God to get him in or out of situations that he either wants to be in or out of at that time.
Yeah, I'm always uncomfortable with folks using God or their religion and saying, well, this is, my decision was based on it. It's all when Reggie White talked about God sent me to the Packers, like, no, dude, the millions sent you to the Packers. Like, that stuff bothers me to no end, but I get it. Like, I know the game that they're playing. I used to ask the same thing about Reggie White, and I kind of feel the same way. Or Kurt Warner. I always feel this way about folks who just use God as the so-called driving force in all decisions that they make. I'm like, no, that's bullshit. I'm not, listen, have your faith, whatever, but don't act like I'm a fucking idiot. Don't act like I'm just going to believe that you're doing this because of God. I mean, come on, get out of here.
Yeah, you know what? You might not. There are a lot of people who do.
Sure are. Sure are.
And that's why that game works for people like him.
100%. 100%. Like, that's why you got these pastors in these mega churches and people throwing money at these places.
Yep.
Even when they find out that they're fucking cults, and these dudes will tell you that I'm getting this money so I can buy me a private jet.
and it works.
Oh, I got to give my pastor money because my pastor needs a private jet. Like, you guys are insane.
And hey, listen, football is religion.
It is.
And who's the head pastor? That's the head football coach. And here's my other question. God called you to Jackson State. Did God tell you to leave Jackson State? And did God tell you to go to Colorado?
Yeah.
Why hasn't he mentioned that God told him to go to Colorado? Because God didn't tell him to go to Colorado. You know what told him to go to Colorado? $5 million a year. That's what told him to go to Colorado. Hey, man, just say that. Or don't say that. But don't give me this God bullshit.
I'd have definitely told you, like, listen, $5 million told me that I need to go take this job. Let me be real with y'all. $5 million said I'm going to be real. But, I mean, obviously I'm more going to my decision than that. But, yeah, that paycheck, if you tell me I'm going from 300K to 5 mil, well, yeah, I'm taking that paper.
And no one's going to blame you for that.
I'm taking that paper.
I don't blame him for that. Yep. What I didn't like how he went into Jackson State on that God bullshit anyway. But, hey, listen, man, he went there. He was successful. Jackson State benefited from that. I hope they continue to benefit from the 2.5 years that Deion was there. It was great for Jackson State. But it just, to me, how he moved in this situation, Deion, is in keeping with how he has moved in a lot of situations.
But are you surprised?
Of his post-football playing career. Not surprised at all. Yeah, that don't mean I can't like it.
Yeah, that's facts. Yeah, I'm pretty cynical about stuff like this. I'm like, yeah, and especially when people start talking about God and religion, like, it just makes me. I don't want to say it turns me off.
It turns me off.
But it turns me off. But you know, I don't want to be an asshole about anybody's religion. I get it. I understand that people I know how it makes people feel and moves them, et cetera, but I never will ever buy into that with someone. Like, I mean, even in politics, when I hear Mike Pence talk about God, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I'm sure he's very sincere, but when you hear him bend himself into a pretzel to defend Donald Trump's decisions and all that shit, I'm like, motherfucker, you ain't that godly.
Real godly people don't use God as a reason to make certain decisions.
Yep.
Don't use God singularly. As a reason to make those decisions.
Facts, dude.
God in your religion is almost the consultant aspect of it, not just the entirety of it.
I know we gotta move on. I know we gotta cut pretty soon. But I have this random thing with Barstool Sports I wanted to jump into. Maybe I'll save it for next week. But I would be remiss if we didn't talk about the Baseball Hall of Fame.
I mean. There's two things here. The line from one of my favorite hip hop songs from one of my favorite groups, Tribe Called Quest, Award Tour. I never need a statue to tell me how nice I am. And another one of my favorite songs, another one of my favorite groups, Public Enemy, Terminator X to the Edge of Panic. Who gives a fuck about a goddamn
Grammy? Yes, sir.
Here's my deal with all halls of fame, whether you're talking Pro Football Hall of Fame, the Basketball Hall of Fame, or the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum, because it is a museum, says that right there in the title, is that I don't need those entities to validate what I saw. I know greatness when I see it. I don't need a museum to tell me what you saw was great, what you saw was Hall of Fame worthy. So I say all that to say, I saw Barry Bonds play baseball before steroids and after steroids. I don't need the Hall of Fame to tell me that he is a great player. I don't need the Hall of Fame to tell me that Nolan Ryan was a great player and every player of greatness in between. So my point is that from a fan standpoint, getting upset because your guy is not in the Hall of Fame, I don't understand the point of getting exercised about it because you know what you saw. And you know you saw greatness. And if you know you saw that, be content with that. Be happy with it. You don't need the Baseball Hall of Fame and its voters to validate what you saw. That being said, because it is a popularity contest, it's not truly and totally and singularly based on your on-field performance. Because it is a popularity contest, the moral of the story is, we're talking about Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens to a certain extent, but more about Bonds, don't be an asshole. don't be an asshole. Because if you're going to want people to place you into baseball's Valhalla, then like Deion Sanders, as we talked about earlier, you're going to have to play the game a little bit. And Barry, and listen, he is more than welcome to do this, but he did not play the game. If anything, he was openly hostile, not just to the media, but to Giants fans here in the Bay Area. Openly hostile to these people. But fans being fans, they'll put up with their favorite player being hostile because, well, he's their favorite player. But when you're talking about media members whose job it is to find out, to vote for you in the Hall of Fame, and now with this committee, which is comprised of former players and other people who either actually played baseball or worked in baseball, you can't walk around being an asshole, cheating very obviously, and then getting upset with people when they dare say, hey, man, it sure seems like you've cheated to become the home run king and the sings at home run king. For you to just be outwardly just an asshole about it, now all of a sudden 20 years later, and maybe I'm putting this on Barry Bonds because he hadn't said anything, but for you now 20 years later to be like, I don't understand why they're not putting me in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Dog, because you were a jerk.
You were a dick to people. It comes back to haunt you.
It always does.
Yeah, dude, it really is interesting. Like I've come full circle on the whole thing. Initially, I was like, you know what? Anybody who did the roids shouldn't be in. Now I'm like, let everybody in. Like, fuck it. What are we doing here? Yeah. What are we doing here?
Who cares?
seriously, like at this point, mainly because, and I think I feel this way because of the inconsistency of the application of that particular judgment. Because, I mean, I'm certain Alex Rodriguez would be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I'm sure he will be. And and we celebrated David Ortiz going into the Hall of Fame.
But what's the difference between David Ortiz and Alex Rodriguez and Barry Bonds? Is that David Ortiz was liked.
Yeah,
no one don't like Alex Rodriguez because Alex Rodriguez is a phony. Yeah. Don't like Barry Bonds because Barry Bonds was openly hostile.
Yeah, and I just think that just from our side, from the media side of it, I just don't like the double standard applied to, and because it's such a hard subjective thing in the first place, like what are we doing here? Barry kind of, as much as I'm annoyed by the fact that at this point in the game, I'm annoyed by the fact that he's not in there. I also feel like, yeah, but you also, you know, you kind of only got yourself to blame too.
Right.
Like,
right.
Everybody's right. I guess is what I'm saying. Like everybody's right.
And that's been my point is that he only has himself to blame. And it's not just because he took performance enhancing drugs. That's a big part of it, but it's not just because of that.
Yeah.
If he would have just been not as, I mean, it's clear he was cheating. And it's clear that cheating led to him breaking the two most significant records in American sports, the single season home run record and the all-time home run record. Those are the only two records people know. That's it. Most people don't know who's thrown the most touchdowns in the NFL. Most people don't know who the leading scorer in NBA history is. It's Kareem. It's going to be LeBron here in the not too distant future. But everybody knows who's hit the most home runs in a single season and who has hit the most home runs over the course of an entire career. So for you to cheat to achieve the goal of breaking those two very sacrosanct records, and then when people say, hey, man, it sure seems like you did something you shouldn't have done, and then you get righteously indignant about it, that's just not going to fly with people. And you could get upset. I'm not you, but you could get upset and say, well, they should only just vote on you know, that player's merits and their accomplishments on the field. Well, it's not just that way, because if it was just about the numbers, then what do you need voters for? You could just look at numbers and go, that guy's in, that guy's in, that guy's in. You just have to have, you know, a certain set of metrics. You have human beings playing this game, and you have human beings, whether you like it or not, and it's not just media members, because again, with, you know, this latest rejection of Bonds in the Hall of Fame, there were no media members. These were all baseball people. Mm-hmm. I think he only got like 2 or 4 votes.
Yeah, dude.
They don't like the dude. He's got nobody but himself to blame.
Not a man who had many friends and or allies in the world of baseball.
And it didn't have to be that way, though.
Which, Rod, think about what I just said, though. You know how difficult it is to be in that fraternity for 25, 30 years and have no allies?
That's what I'm saying.
That says something about you as a human being.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
You had Dusty Baker. And Dusty, let's be honest, Dusty overlooked a lot of your bullshit like a family member should and would in order to have your back. But as much as
we love Dusty, put Dusty aside for a second. Yeah. Put his own father, Barry Bonds, aside, who was a great player. Put him aside. Bro, Willie Mays is his godfather.
Yes.
Willie Mays is basically his family. Yeah. You've got the one of, and many people think, the greatest ball player of all time.
Sure.
You got that dude on your side, in your corner. Willie Mays is family to you, and everybody loved Willie Mays.
Yes,
that's not enough, because you went out of your way to be an asshole.
Yeah, this is why this is also sort of my, I don't know if issue is the right word, but it's kind of one of those things that I think about when it comes to all these halls of fame is it can never be, and I will always stand by this, it can never be just about numbers, because numbers don't really tell the story about anybody's career, about that moment, that snapshot in time.
Yeah.
Baseball, it has less there are a few changes that happen to the sport that affect the on-field outcome, as different than basketball and football. But ultimately, you know what I've said to you? I feel like if the story of the sport cannot be told without you, then you should be in the Hall of Fame. To me, it doesn't matter what your numbers are. Mm-hmm. It comes down to, can we do this without – this is why I'm a proponent of Bo Jackson being in the Hall of Fame.
Which one?
both of them, Rod. Both of them.
That's
both
why I asked.
Both. I legitimately mean that. He should be in both halls of fame. His numbers were not amazing, but if you, like me, lived through the era of Bo Jackson, it's very, very difficult to talk about that sport without talking about Bo.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Football Hall of Fame, absolutely. He's one of the greatest running backs of all time, even if he did it for a short amount of time. All right.
Yeah.
And we can look at Gale Sayers as an example, who did it for a small amount of time, yet in that small amount of time, he hit, and he hit hard.
But we saw what he did.
Yeah. Baseball's a little bit of a different story. He's probably, if not easily, the best athlete to ever play baseball. We saw that. But baseball, I think you lean a little bit more towards the numbers, because that's always been in the sport's sort of history. And I think, because what you're talking about, it's not just numbers, and I get that. You need context.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm right with you on that. But I think in baseball, the numbers do provide a greater amount of the context you need, more so in football, more so in basketball. And I just think with Bo, if that hip hadn't blown out, I think he would have been on his way to being a baseball Hall of Famer. I just can't go, because if you go and look at his numbers, they weren't all that great, because he just didn't play long enough. He was still learning the game on the fly in the majors while he was also putting up a Hall of Fame football career.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think the Hall of Fame should be something that people go back and look at and go, oh my God, this is what made this particular sport so great.
Telling the story of the sport, which is why Bonds and Clemens and the other steroid people should be in there.
I think McGuire,
but they don't
want to
tell that story.
I think all these guys should be. No, you got to be honest about your story.
Yeah. But here's the thing, and it goes back to what I said at the beginning of this discussion. I don't need those institutions and the people who run those institutions. I don't need them to tell me what I saw was great.
Right.
I don't need them to tell me that Bo Jackson is one of the greatest athletes of all time and one of the greatest to play, speaking specifically of professional football. Yeah. I don't need the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio to tell me that. I saw it. Now, I get it. For people who didn't see it, you would like for there to be some recognition of his talent. I get that. But I'm kind of being simplistic about it, and I'm boiling it down to just me as a fan. I don't need the Pro Football Hall of Fame to tell me any of that. I saw it. And if certain people decide that what I saw wasn't great, well, that's just like your opinion, man. It's all right, whatever.
And the other part to that is, I go, Fred McGriff. He was a really, really, really good player. And this is what I mean. I think you could get by without talking about Fred McGriff.
Sure.
It's not a knock on big crime dog. You know. Joe Carter, then. Why isn't Joe Carter in the Hall of Fame?
Why is it all of a sudden I'm blanking on his name. Why is Will Clark in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I mean, why not?
But again, I saw Will Clark play. Man, I don't – okay, maybe the injuries and kind of cutting his really good year short.
Sure.
But when Will Clark was at his peak for those 4 to 5 years
– Yeah.
Hey, man, that dude was incredible with a bat in his hand and also with a glove on his right hand. Yeah. I saw him play. I was lucky enough to see him play.
Yeah.
You don't think Will Clark's a Hall of Famer? That's your problem, not mine.
Yeah, man. I mean, you look at guys like Don Mattingly. Is Don Mattingly in the Hall of Fame?
Boy, I mean, he's of that Will Clark era and ilk. I'd have to go back and look at the numbers, but Don Mattingly was pretty damn good, man.
His numbers were insane
for what he was asked to do, which is put the ball in play and get on base. He did it.
His numbers were insane, but in for those peak years, I mean, numbers were insane.
And if the Yankees hadn't been garbage in the 80s like they were, would have gone to the playoffs or whatever, Don Mattingly would have been in the Hall of Fame.
Oh boy, these are facts. Yeah. We'll never see the story of a Dave Stewart in the Hall of Fame, because there was a guy who for a good 6 years, he was dominant. And a guy who pretty much was thrown in the scrap heap.
Mm-hmm.
And this dude came back and he played for he was the best pitcher on one of the greatest teams that we'd seen in the last 40 years.
If they would have won more World Series, the late 80s, 80s.
For sure.
We're probably having a different discussion. This is where it gets personal for me, because Dave Stewart was a hero. This interaction I had with Dave Stewart was only a few months ago. I'm sure I told this on the podcast. Did I tell you that I met him at the NBC Sports Bay Area studios and I fanboyed out hard? Did I tell you that?
Maybe you did. Tell me the story.
I'll tell the story again. So anyway, I'm at NBC Sports Bay Area getting ready for the Niner pregame show, which is wild enough for me to say anyway. And Dave Stewart was there because he does the A's pre and post game. So this is the end of baseball season, very beginning of football season. And you walk in and on the first floor, there's just a bunch of cubicles. And I pick a cubicle to sit down to get ready to do the show. And in the cubicle next to me, it's Dave Stewart. Now, I'd interviewed Dave a couple of times on the radio, and I think I might have met him once in person, but those times it was always, you know, a professional thing. You only got a few minutes to talk to him. And so it was about, you know, whether it was his career or when he was an agent, Dave Stewart, or when he was efforting to keep the A's at the Coliseum site. You know, talking to Dave Stewart, it was always in a professional vein.
Sure.
But this time, it's just Dave Stewart in one cubicle. I'm right next to him. And I'm like, oh, my God, Dave Stewart. and Dave Stewart and J.R. Richard, who passed away earlier this year, former Astros pitcher, those were the two. They were superheroes to me. Yeah. I wanted to be like them. They were black pitchers. They threw hard. They had such a presence. As a kid growing up who loved baseball and who loved pitching, those guys were everything to me. So Dave Stewart is right here. And I'm like, man, do I tell him? Do I talk to him? Do I tell him? Like, no, don't do it. And then at some point I was just like, hey, man, you're never going to get this chance again. So long story short, I say, hey, Dave, you know, I hope you're not too busy, but I just wanted to tell you that, you know, you inspired me. I wanted to be a pitcher because of you and J.R. Richard. I wanted to be like you guys. And he was very nice. He said, thank you. He goes, but it's interesting you mentioned J.R. Richard because he was a hero to me when Dave Stewart was a youngster in the game and his early days in the late 70s, early 80s with the Dodgers. He said that J.R. Richard took him under, you know, his wing and not only kind of taught him kind of the ins and outs of being a baseball player and a black baseball player and a black pitcher, but he would look out for him and make sure he had the right clothes, make sure he had the right shoes. Yeah. You know, he goes, you know, J.R. Richard, it's funny you mentioned he was your hero. He was my hero too. And so out on the outside, I'm keeping it cool. Like, okay, oh, that's an awesome story. And thank you for, you know, for allowing me to intrude on your space and just kind of fanboy out. But on the inside, I'm like, holy shit, man, Dave Stewart's having a conversation. And I'm like, he's my hero. And then he's telling me about how J.R. Richard is a hero. Like on the inside, yo, I am freaking the hell out. But man, it was just such a really nice conversation. And just to have that moment, I didn't regret it then. I don't regret it now. And I'll never regret actually, you know, doing what I did and having that conversation. Because it was such a fun, great human interaction. And I think I said this on Twitter that, you know, there's this old saying, you never want to meet your heroes because you'll eventually end up disappointed. I go, well, you know what? Actually, what I found out is that's not universally true.
Yeah.
It depends on who your hero is. And if your hero's a good person and you meet that person, there's a really good chance you're going to have a great interaction and come away thinking of that person in an even more heroic fashion. And that's how I felt coming out of that conversation with Dave Stewart. And I still feel that way to this day.
Dave Stewart played 19 years. He had 13 years in the AL. And his record was 150-116.
Dave Stewart was a bad dude.
And he had his ERA was 4.0. He had 55 complete games. And 9 shutouts. So how many pitchers do you know are going to have 55 complete games?
I don't know if we had 55 complete games in all of the baseball games played this year by every single team. And I'm not joking.
Seriously, dude. Seriously. I mean, and don't forget his record against Roger Clemens. He ate Clemens.
Yeah, he did.
He ate Clemens. It was such a personal thing for him because you know that shit that happened with Stu and Clemens kind of went off about it. Stu ate his lunch every single time he pitched against him after that. I just feel like the guy's a remarkable player and the things that he did, particularly those 8 years that he spent with the A's, it should be recognized some way. Yeah. 119-78 in 8 years with the A's. 49 complete games in those 8 years with the A's. 9 shutouts. I mean, come on, man. 373 ERA. What are we talking about here?
No. Brother was great, man. He's absolutely great. And just a sweetheart of a dude. Really is.
And how many starting black pitchers ever really achieved that level of greatness?
I mean, boy, we're talking about only
you got
a few
Gibson,
people. Vida Blue.
Vida. Who else? JR for a few years.
For too short of a time. Boy, I mean,
think about it.
Lee Smith was a hell of a reliever.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of another black starting pitcher. Boy, I know I'm forgetting somebody and I feel real bad about it. I'm just kind of going through my mind's eye here.
The ones you know, I mean, the fact of the matter is it's got to be very few since you can't think of very
Well,
many.
there is the overarching point. There
Right?
you go.
It's insane. Like, this sport is 150 years old and there's only essentially five or six starting black pitchers you can think of off the top of your head.
I mean, Don Newcomb, but that's way back in the 50s
Yeah. And you got
with the
Satch.
Brooklyn Dodgers, say, Satchel Paige, and that's Negro Leagues,
And
unfortunately,
he was
all Negro
cooked by
Leagues.
the time he got, to the majors.
I mean, yeah, well, he's 45, 46.
Yeah.
If,
So, I mean,
40, 45, 46 for a black man in the late 40s, early 50s, that's like 80
yeah, real
in normal
talk.
years.
Real talk.
All that racism ages you
And now that I think
rapidly.
about it, maybe next week we'll talk about players who maybe should be in the Hall of Fame, and for some reason they don't get the recognition they deserve. I'd love to have that conversation.
Yeah, man, let's do it. Let's absolutely do it. Another quality hang, my
Yes,
brother. This
sir.
was
Yes, sir.
fun. This was fun. It's not just the name of the podcast. As you can tell when we get together, it is a quality hang. Make sure you follow us on all of the socials. Shoot us an email if you dare. QualityHangPod@gmail.com. My brother, it was good to do this once again.
Yeah, man.
Is this the first show we've done since Thanksgiving? No,
No, no,
no, this
no.
is
We
the
did.
second one we've done
Yeah,
since
yeah, yeah,
Thanksgiving.
yeah, yeah,
Okay,
yeah.
all right. Man, Christmas is rapidly approaching. I know it's such a hacky thing to say that, but then you get to December and you're like, Jesus Christ, your birthday is like right around the corner. Like, I'm having this conversation with Jesus Christ. Like, man, it's about to be another trip around the sun for you, JC. How many has this been?
At least two, 3,000.
2022 years? Holy shit, you don't look a year over 2021.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
The
Jesus knows a guy that keeps him young. Jesus is perpetually 33 years old. How
That's
does he
right.
pull it off? What
That's
is his
right.
secret?
It's the melanin, black don't crack.
Religious humor. We do it all on this show. Talk to you next week, my brother.
Yes, man, be safe.
All right, everybody. Be good at it. We'll see you.